Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today we're talking more potential loan forgiveness, egg fights, and workplace drama.
Yeah, and luckily that workplace drama does not include folks fighting over eggs.
It's not happening between you and I either.
Not you and I. We've got plenty of eggs at home, actually. We've got, I don't want to, not to brag or anything, but I'm pretty sure we've got 48 eggs.
Okay, Richie Rich.
And it's not that we stocked up either. Like, literally, we go through one of those 24 Costco flats, like, in less than a week, I'll just say.
Oh,
that.
I'm sure, yeah.
That's pretty normal. We definitely throw down.
For a family of your size.
I was going to ask you, when you used to go into the office to work, did you ever, speaking of workplace drama, it makes me think about folks putting labels on different sauces.
Oh.
And people don't want other people eating their sauce.
I would not put anything in the main fridge because there was like lots of stinky rotting stuff in there too after a point. So we had like a...
Yucky.
We had a tiny fridge. I shared an office with one other person. We had a tiny fridge and we just kind of shared that amongst us.
Kept that thing locked down
tight. Keep it clean and then you don't let anybody else put their stuff in there because it just, you know, put it in the main fridge or get your own.
I like it, man. But yeah, this is our Friday flight and we're going to talk about the best stories that we came across this week and how those stories are going to pertain to your personal finances. But Joel, let's talk about this fancy dance.
All right, frugal and cheap.
That you and I were invited to.
Do we love our daughters or not?
So a friend of ours reached out and told us about it's a little nonprofit group. I'm pretty sure it's not like he's doing this for profit, and it is a daddy daughter dance essentially.
Yep.
This is kind of fancy. You get dressed up and everything. You wear your nicest clothes. You go. It's in a venue in town that I have shot at many times.
Yeah, like it's a nice spot.
A lot of folks get married there, but it's also really stinking expensive. I think it's $160 for one kid
for one night on to town with your daughter. Yes,
which is a lot of money. So you and I started to debate this, and we're like, oh no, this is good fodder for the show. But
if that's your jam,
let me hear your argument. Where are you on this?
If that's your jam as a dad, and you're like, this is going to make my daughter feel special, this is what we're into, we like to do this, and I'm gonna budget the money, set it aside to go to this dance, take my daughter to this dance, I think that's great. I will say it's not for me though, and I don't think it's for my kids. My middle daughter, she prefers Waffle House. That's what makes her feel special, and honestly makes me feel happy too. So I think
your oldest daughter, you don't think she's gonna want to go dance and party?
She might like it, and even if she did though, I'd still be hard pressed to spend $160 on this dance. But I don't know that. I think she might be like, oh, that was sweet, But it wouldn't mean more to her than
it
taking
register.
Her. There's a lot of other cool things I could do with her that cost a lot less money.
Especially for that much.
Yes.
Money. Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence.
I told my other daughter, I'm like, well, let's go. I wanted to take her to a climbing gym soon.
Nice.
And she was like, that sounds awesome, Dad.
Yes.
Let's do that. I'd rather funnel my dollars towards those experiences
yep.
than something like this.
Totally. Yeah. I feel like we get around a lot of the draw to go to something like this through daddy-daughter dates. And like,
yeah.
I'm thinking about taking one of our youngest daughter to go get her nails done. I'm like, I feel like that's something that she would totally...
That's like 20 or 25 bucks.
And I would totally do it alongside with her.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would have a even bigger impression on her. And that would just be a lot of fun. And the other thing, too, there are also other ways to go party.
Sure.
By going to friends' weddings. I feel like weddings used to be this huge thing that folks would change their plans in order to make sure that they were able to attend, to see family members, to see old friends. And I think that could definitely be a way that you get some of that dancing element,
yeah.
you know, where it is a party without having to fork out that much money. You can spend
sure.
like a fraction of that on whatever gift you get for that couple.
I get the impetus. I feel like it's a sweet thought and... But it's
I definitely get that.
I think there's a way to do it for hopefully less money.
A lot
like
less.
That's just a lot of money.
The
and
what you're missing
it feels
out
prohibitive and
right.
it's just not my jam anyway.
So. What's cool though is being able to demonstrate how you want your daughter to expect someone that she were to go out on a date with.
Sure.
You want to be able to set the bar real high.
For sure. Yeah.
And so I guess that's the part of it that makes me still consider it a little bit because
yeah.
it's like there's just a formality around it that I want to see shown to my daughters if and when they go to dances or like when they start going on dates. This is in our future to do.
Yeah.
these discussions are in the cards.
So maybe we're being cheap. I don't know.
I
don't think so. Not going to happen for me this year, but maybe in the future, especially if there's a sweet discount code that cuts it in half or something like that. But all right, let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday flight and the sampling of stories we found interesting this week. Let's get to that student loan forgiveness story right off the bat because, you know, we still don't know what's going to happen with the Biden administration's $10,000 to $20,000 student loan forgiveness proposal. That's still tied up in the courts. The Supreme Court is set to take that case up likely in late spring. But there's potentially even more interesting news on the student loan front this week. Something potentially even bigger than that student loan forgiveness. And most people will be like, well, it's bigger than just getting a chunk of your debt lopped off. Well, new income-based repayment rules could have an even bigger impact on a ton of college grads and the help that they're going to receive if these new IBR, income-based repayment rules, are enacted. And there are a few different income-based repayment plans currently on the books. But this new one is basically going to be a lot better than the ones that are currently around.
It's got a lot more perks.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot more generous. It could cut. It's going to cut in half the payment amounts for borrowers based on their discretionary income. And so we can see the average payment amount drop precipitously based on these, you know, new income-based rules. Loan balances, they wouldn't be allowed to grow if folks are making on-time payments. We'd see a lot more low-income folks with a monthly student loan payment of $0, which would obviously be majorly beneficial for their budget. And it would also slash the forgiveness timeline from 20 years to 10. So cut that in half, too, for a whole lot of borrowers as well. And so while we're waiting for the Supreme Court to do their thing, this somewhat quiet proposal, it's getting some headlines, but it's not getting nearly the headlines that forgiveness was. This could end up making, I would say, a much bigger impact than $10,000 lopped off your student loans.
That's right. Yeah. So friend of the show, Travis, over at Student Loan Planner, he tweeted, Biden just proposed a permanent student loan pause and free college for almost all, but no one realizes it yet.
Yeah, that's how big of an impact this might have.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it would be an obvious relief to a lot of folks with significant amounts of student loan debt. And even after payments are set to resume, this would ensure that they kind of don't resume for millions of borrowers.
Yeah, it's like a way to prolong.
We're going to push this out, and then after 10 years, poof,
you don't
disappears.
Call it a pause. You're calling it something else, but that's in effect what it's doing.
You're eliminating it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, where does this thing stand? Well, it's in this 30-day comment period, but we could see it become an official rule soon after that. And so, yeah, one thing that we should mention is that, you know, neither this plan nor the forgiveness endeavor impact the sticker price of a college education. They're not addressing that head on. And we'd love to see some focus on actually bringing down the cost of college, not just helping folks pay for that overpriced education on the back end. And actually, I take that back. I think it will have an impact on the sticker price of college. Because anytime you have
it's gonna make it go up.
Of a good being subsidized, what does that then do? You've got the partakers, the folks who consume that good. They say, oh, well, if you're going to give me money to buy this thing, I'm going to go buy more of that thing. You essentially are reducing the cost of college for individuals. And of course, colleges, they only have a limited supply of their education, right? Like, there are only so many students that they can have on campus. And so if they have more folks than ever clamoring to get into their college because it's becoming effectively more affordable for those potential college grads, what are they going to do to balance out that supply and demand? You raise the stinking prices.
Yeah.
Like, we only need to look back to the past 2 or 3 years to see something, a very similar dynamic, right? During the pandemic, we were all waiting on those stimmy checks to show up. And what did that additional cash on hand cause? It caused prices of all goods and services to skyrocket.
It's this thing called inflation we've been talking about now.
Thing called, oh yeah, general inflation.
Yeah.
And so we only need to look back. I mean, we have a very recent example as to what this is likely going to do to something like the cost of college.
But we're not learning from that. And the reality is, this does incentivize people to take out more and more student loan debt because you realize, well, hey, my payments probably aren't going to be that bad, even if I do take on $100K in student loans to get that degree. And eventually they're going to be forgiven. So what's the harm?
Yeah.
And it just encourages people to load up on
and
the stuff.
Yeah.
And we're going to just see the federal government paying hundreds of billions of dollars to more than they already are
totally
to subsidize people to go to college.
And by the way, this isn't like this isn't a political soapbox. This is just economics. This is supply and demand. And another note, I mean, I don't blame individuals for taking advantage of that, because if you are going to incentivize a certain behavior, I think it would be foolish to not accept the offerings that are being presented to you.
Say, kind of like when you get a 2.5% mortgage rate, you're like, cool, this is great. And then you don't want to pay it off when mortgage rates go up.
Yeah, exactly. And going back to the stimmy checks, we were all sitting there waiting for those checks to drop, for those checks to hit our bank accounts. It's not that as individuals we shouldn't necessarily respond to those incentives. It's just that we feel that the government is going about this the wrong way.
Yeah. For sure. And again, not attacking the problem. We are trying to put a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. And the root cause, the root problem, still remains unattended. But Matt, you mentioned inflation. And let's talk about egg prices, something that have become massively inflated recently.
Seen more headlines about eggs over the past 2 weeks.
Yes, you have.
It's been a long time.
Well, that's because they've gone up by something like about 30% in a month. So, and my wife, Emily, she went to Costco. You have two crates, you lucky dog.
Yeah.
But she said they were completely out of all eggs, even the expensive fancy
ones. Wait, do y'all have any right now in your fridge?
We probably got like 18 eggs in our fridge. Okay. Yeah.
If y'all need some eggs, y'all let us know.
Oh, don't worry, I'm coming knocking on your door. It is interesting to see egg prices rocketing up in the way they are. Like, they're even higher in California. The LA Times says that a dozen eggs is going to cost you $7.37 right now. And part of the reason they're so much more expensive in California is because law there only allows for cage-free eggs, which means there's even less supply, which means, of course, even higher prices. And that is triple the cost of what you would have paid a year ago. It's something like $2.40, and now it's $7.37. So we've seen egg prices just go up precipitously, and apparently there are literally fights breaking out in the egg aisle, which sounds like it could actually threaten the preciously low supply of eggs.
It's like, no, not the eggs.
Yeah, someone gets slammed into the pallet of eggs, and boom, you just like ruined a bunch.
That's one thing if you're fighting over like cans of beans or something like that. But like, these eggs are going to be harmed in the this actual process.
You still walk off with like a slightly dented can of beans, but the eggs are just ruined. And it's not just your normal inflation trends, though, that are causing this spike in egg prices. It's the avian flu, which is leading to the deaths of tens of millions of chickens, wreaking havoc on the supply of just the most basic kitchen staple, like that everyone has in their fridge, or almost everyone, right? And when something goes up in a price in a big way like this, typically, Matt, we would recommend a substitute for someone to say, hey, guess what? Chicken went up 100%, but beef prices remain relatively stable. You should substitute and eat more beef instead of chicken. I mean, that typically not how it works, but I'm just saying, like, usually we would say, don't buy the really expensive thing for a while, wait for prices to come down. But when it comes to eggs, there's just not really any equivalent on that front, so you almost have to grin and bear it.
Well, kind of there is. Well, have you ever heard of aquafaba?
No.
It's like this, it's the water.
How do you know about all these weird things?
Because my wife is Kate, and so we talk about food stuff. It's the liquid that's left behind in a can of chickpeas. And so it's like this starchy, protein-laden liquid, and evidently, and you can whip it. and create a meringue, which normally it's calls kind of like for egg whites.
Yeah.
So it's like a vegan egg white substitute, basically.
Okay, what's the yolk substitute, Matt?
Cadbury cream eggs, okay. Maybe you
just like, crack one of those up. That's a good point.
It kind of makes one wonder if they should like buy some of those chickens, get the jump in on the backyard chicken trend.
Go back to their agrarian roots.
Yeah, like I mean, we did that for a while way back in the day. Another way you can keep from blowing out your grocery budget is by wasting less food, which is what the New York Times wrote about this week. One of my favorite topics. The average household shovels nearly one third of their food into the garbage. And this article talked about a town in Ohio that's on a mission to do something about it, largely through education. And so much of the waste that happens, obviously, it's at the household level. And so there are a number of things that you can do to reduce food waste. We've got a few tips. First of all, plan your meals. Once you have that plan, make a list and then shop via that list. Don't go to the grocery store hungry and, you know, bypass the egg aisle, start walking through all the prepared foods that look so delicious that cost so much money, though. But then on the back end of fixing a meal, make sure that you eat, or if you don't eat, freeze your leftovers. Mm-hmm. I know this sounds super basic, but oftentimes the most simple solutions are going to be the most effective.
Yeah, usually the biggest food waste culprit is that we're just scraping those leftovers into the trash can.
Right into the trash, man. Yeah. And it's not always easy, I will say. So recently we bought a bunch, like a Costco. It's like 3 pounds of sliced chicken breast for the kids and some other cheese, some fancy provolone that we've never gotten before. The kids didn't like it. Did I throw that food away? Heck no. I've been eating it for like 3 days straight.
I've noticed. You're like, I think you like it, but you're also probably tired of it, but you're pushing through.
I liked it initially. I am getting tired of it. But guess what? It's the weekend, and so I'm going to toss that in the freezer. I'm going to revisit those leftovers sometime next week.
There you go.
So do the same thing. Eat those leftovers. If you feel like you've had it too much, maybe you're getting sick of it, toss it in the freezer and pull that out in a couple weeks. Or maybe at the end of the month, once your grocery budget is looking a little more lean. And also, maybe dial back on how many omelets you're making. Yeah, going back to the
who
eggs.
Who can afford them anymore?
We're not experts on the bird diseases out there, so we don't have any idea where the price of eggs are headed. But if egg prices continue to go up, you might, you know, want to cut back a bit on the consumption of those. And also consider, make some adjustments to your budget, because you need to make sure that your spending is reflecting this new reality.
All right, Matt, we got more to get to on this Friday flight. And we talked just a second ago about one government proposal that could massively impact how much people have to pay on their student loans. But there's another government proposal that might go into effect later this year, too, that might have an even bigger impact on our economy and on a bunch of individuals. We'll discuss that and more right after this.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back. Do you think we talked a little bit too much about eggs before the break?
No.
I don't want this to be like, yeah. Okay.
Everyone eats them. It's really important. Like, and it's crazy to see something like that.
Yeah.
We're all like inflation, 8% a year. You're like, ooh, that's tough to stomach. But egg prices literally 30%? Went up like 40% overnight, it felt like. Yeah.
That's insane. So that being said, we got to stop because now we are talking. it is now time for our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from Bloomberg, and the headline reads, "Airline stocks dip as FAA system failure leads to groundings." Basically, you may have seen this earlier this week, but the FAA...
Or you may have been at the airport and been like, dang it.
Hopefully you weren't at the airport. The notification system, it had an outage on Wednesday morning, and that impacted airlines in a meaningful way, causing obviously more delays and cancellations of flights. And you might be thinking, this is kind of a, what an odd, ludicrous headline, right? Well, kind of felt like a good way to show that there are all sorts of things that can impact the price of individual stocks, especially in the short term, and many of which are out of the hands of the businesses themselves. You know, this was an FAA failure, not the airlines themselves, but still, they felt the brunt of that failure, at least for a little while. And so it's just important to keep in mind that all sorts of things can impact the value of an individual stock or even an entire industry. An errant tweet makes me think back to Elon Musk. Haven't heard from him in a while. What's he up to? Who knows? Hopefully he's back to work.
Hopefully he's actually like working. Yeah. And not less tweeting, more running Twitter.
Doing what he's best at. But other environmental effects too, like rising interest rates or even going in and exiting a pandemic. You can't predict these things as an individual investor, as smart as you think you might be. And that's why, you know, buying an entire basket of, let's say, 500 stocks in an index fund is a far better move, we think, for almost everyone out there.
Why 500 stocks? What are you referring to, Matthew?
500 or how
it's
many stocks are in,
or 30, like
yeah,
in
I was
going to
say
total stock market.
Like 3,000. Yeah. That's another approach you can take.
Yeah. Well, so we had a listener email us last year, and he told us, Matt, how insane we are for telling our listeners not to invest in single stocks. And he specifically detailed how amazing it's been for him owning Apple and Tesla stock. And he's like, this was probably 9 or 10 months ago. And he was talking about how much money he'd made and how we must be just complete ignoramuses to not suggest that our listeners do the same.
Yeah, Tesla in particular was on a nice ride up to its peak.
Yes,
later
it
that
was.
Year.
And I didn't want to dissuade him from doing what he wanted to do, but I'm also not willing to change my take and what we recommend folks to invest in based purely on this dude's experience. And so the question is, like, how are those stocks doing now that were doing so well for him a year ago? Well, even though Tesla as a company has had a solid last 12 months, the stock has dropped more than 70%. And that's another thing. It's like, it's not like Tesla is massively missing out on the deliveries of the vehicles they've said they're going to make. They've been doing pretty good on that front, but
they delivered more than ever at the, you know, by the end of 2022.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as many as they were shooting for, but still the most they've
pretty
ever,
darn close.
Yeah.
And it was the most they'd ever done. And yet still the stock has been snake bitten. And so how's that listener feeling now? I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he's probably not very happy with his individual stock choices unless he bought that Tesla stock like a bunch of years back still. But the truth is that there's just too much data showing how risky it is to invest heavily in just a few companies. And even if that company is a pretty good one, like a company like Southwest, they had issues, right, that we talked about last week. And you never know when a storm or an FAA failure can hurt that company's stock performance. So diversification, we would say, is the only free lunch. And our suggestion, as always, is to dedicate no more than 5% of your overall portfolio to riskier individual picks. And again, Matt, the story that you mentioned from Bloomberg, it's like this is one of those things that investors couldn't have predicted, that there was going to be some sort of failure in this system that impacts the profitability of airlines. But it did. It does. And there's all sorts of things that we can't predict. And that's why it's best for us to do less predicting and to stick to that basic boring investing method.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's important to note that basically everyone's strategy failed over the past year, right? Some just did worse than others. And when you are invested in single stocks, you're going to see potentially higher upsides, but also you're going to see dramatic downsides when things aren't looking so great. And many of the folks who did the worst, they were heavily allocated to individual stocks, often the tech sector. So yeah, we believe that diversification is key. And the brilliant investing writer Jason Zweig, he wrote this week about how our response to that failure, how it should be to double down. And you know, this might seem counterintuitive. It might seem somewhat crazy, but we believe that he is spot on.
Or crazy like a fox, maybe.
Smart. Stocks and bonds, they had an awful 2022. Will 2023 be a lot better? We're not sure. I mean, it probably, but it may not. When you look back at the 10 worst years for the stock market, the average three-year total returns are over 32%. It's, I think, 32.5%. That's over 10% annually. Not too shabby. But either way, if you are in the wealth building stage of life and you're investing for the long term, doubling down, buying while the market is on sale, continuing to stick money into these assets at depressed prices is exactly what you should be doing.
Yeah. The mantra that our friend of the show, Nick Majuli, has coined is just keep buying.
Just keep buying.
I think that's a good one. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about work for a second, Matt, because and specifically, let's talk about something that is happening at Disney this week. Well, former CEO Bob Iger returned to the helm at Disney, I think it was last month, and maybe 2 months ago. And earlier this week, he's already making some changes. He called workers back into the office. He said that starting March 1st, every Disney employee is going to need to start coming in 4 days a week. And here's what he said. I wanted to share this quote from Bob Iger. He said, "In a creative business like ours, nothing can replace the ability to connect, observe, and create with peers that comes from being physically together, nor the opportunity to grow professionally by learning from leaders and mentors." Bob said, "It is my belief that working together more in person will benefit the company's creativity, culture, and our employees' careers." Matt, I think he makes a great point here. You know, these are actually the two main reasons why we're likely to see more companies follow suit, is because it has benefits for the company and for individual employees and for their careers. We think that hybrid work is here to stay, at least to some degree, but also, don't be shocked if your company or your boss makes a similar move in the near future. I think there were predictions a few years ago that in-person work was going to be a thing of the past. I don't think that's the case. And I think we've seen some massive benefits of hybrid work and the ability for more employees to do more remote work. But there's also something massively important about in-person collaboration.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for a company like Disney, there are going to be other companies that see how this experiment goes over at Disney, and then they might try to implement it themselves.
They need to get those creative juices flowing all together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we underestimate the power of like real life interactions, like IRL. I think that needs to be something that we consider more, not just from like a work standpoint and
at
the
least
ability
until the metaverse gets better
to collaborate and to work together, but just from a social, like relational level.
I
think hanging out in real life is underrated for
yeah.
sure.
And that when he said for our employees' careers, I think that's what that is. I think when you are working in person in front of your bosses, like your career stands to benefit too. And
sure.
If you're out of sight, you're almost out of mind. And that's important to note. If you are, if you want to move up the ranks, if you want to get paid more, if you want more responsibility, then being in person is probably going to help you in that endeavor.
Exactly. But also from a friendship level, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, that too.
Like not just from how is this going to benefit you as an individual professionally, but how is this going to benefit you as an individual to like make friends at work? And interestingly, having a community and having friends at work that's one of those things that can keep you working for an employer to the extent that they wouldn't need to force you to continue to work there with something like a non-compete agreement.
Oh.
Because non-compete clauses, they might be going away soon, thanks to the FTC. A new proposal would outlaw these agreements. They would allow workers to move freely to other businesses in the same industry. And I think this would be a great outcome. We don't like non-competes. They depress worker wages. They stymie innovation. And you might be thinking, this isn't something I need to worry about. That's not the kind of industry that I'm in, but you might
be... This only
be...
applies to like high knowledge professionals.
Right.
Yeah, no.
It's not just high dollar white collar workers. 1 in 5 Americans are subject to a non-compete clause, mm-hmm. Many of whom work in fast food or they work in manual labor. And generally, overall, we think that non-competes are bad for individuals. They're bad for the economy as a whole. So, you know, similar to the new IBR rules, the income-based repayment rules for student loans, this is in a comment period, but it could go into effect later this year. And again, while we might agree with the outcome, it does rub me a little bit the wrong way, the way in which this is coming about. I would much rather see individuals taking the responsibility themselves to decide what it is that they're going to sign and what they're not going to sign. You know, it's one thing to, you know, if you download an app and they're like, all right, you have to agree to all this and then you can use our app. That's one thing. But signing a contract for a job, I feel like that's something that we should be reading over a little bit more. I feel like some of the responsibility should be on us as individuals rather than being some mandate that passes or, you know, some dictate from on high that all businesses have to abide by.
I can see why you'd say that. I don't know if I agree necessarily, because I do think that many of these non-compete contracts can be shady, they can be hard to decipher, and they take advantage of people, and especially a lot of people in low-paying industries too, like security guards or sub sandwich makers. Like a lot of people in non-high profile jobs are being not forced, but maybe coerced into signing some of these sorts of non-compete agreements. And it's bad for the economy and it's bad for those individuals. And then also there's...
I think you underestimate the free will of individual, you know, of just the individual responsibility.
I know multiple friends. I signed one back in the day when I worked for a pressure washing company. And it's one of those things like...
What?
For 2 years, you can't go work for another pressure washing company. And I remember like...
That's
okay,
crazy.
I remember thinking, I probably won't go work for another pressure washing company, but... The fact that I wasn't then able to, once I kind of learned how to do it, I don't think that's a good thing for the economy. It wasn't a good thing for me personally, even though I was done with pressure washing at the time. I have another friend who's an optometrist, and it's one of those things where he signed one of those things, and now he's forced to commute a lengthy distance after leaving that work for just ethical reasons, because he disagreed with the ethics of the company. And so he was put over a barrel, essentially, because of this non-compete. I'd like to see non-competes go away. And
I do as well.
Yeah. So
it's
I'm
just
hoping,
how do you get rid of them? We're in agreement as far as whether or not non-competes are good or not. It seems like they suck just across the board.
Yeah.
But how do we arrive at that point? That's the difference, though.
Yeah. Well, again, they're not going away. They're actually becoming more influential in our society, and they're negatively impacting the wages of millions. So if this is an FTC mandate, I'm okay with it because they're that bad. So, all right, that's going to do it for today's episode. You can find our show notes and links to some of the stuff we mentioned up on our site at howtomoney.com. And Matt, let's also mention that people can follow us on Instagram at How to Money Pod, and you and I, we're taking a 4-person trip with our ladies.
Taking a couple's trip up to bourbon country.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
we may or may not post some pictures to the account if you'd like to keep up with our adventures. Either way, you can follow us at How to Money Pod over there on Instagram.
That's right.
And by the way, we've got a great interview lined up for folks. Monday, we are speaking with the founder of YNAB, You Need a Budget. So if you want to learn more about budgeting and budgeting strategy, make sure to look for that one.
And by the way, it's not as boring as you might think, because we actually think budgets
are awesome.
They should be the opposite of depressing. They should actually make you feel hopeful about your money. And I think Jesse does a great job of helping people connect budgets to the possibilities, right, that your money can help you achieve.
Yeah. All right, man. That's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf-Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.